You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
In the midst of intense mobilization against the tar sands, oil pipelines, and other industrial threats to land and water in North America, Doxa is presenting a film this week that highlights our struggles to protect the environment. Elemental tells the story of three individuals working on three different continents to defend, protect, and restore natural systems that are threatened by the destruction of corporate and industrial interests. In Australia, inventor and entrepreneur Jay Harman searches for investors for a mechanical solution to disrupt global warming. In India, Jadrendra Singh goes on a 40-day pilgrimage down India's once pristine Ganges River to work for its protection. And in northern Alberta, Ariel Durange, a Dene activist at the forefront of the struggle against the tar sands, works tirelessly to organize against the destruction and pollution caused by that development. Emmanuel Von Lee is the co-producer and co-director of Elemental, and he joins me now. Good morning, Emmanuel.
Good morning.
All over the world, there are people working against the destruction of parts of the planet. Why did you choose these three to profile?
We spent quite a bit of time researching potential subjects for the film, and we wanted to find people who were not only involved in different aspects of trying to address environmental issues, but people who also had a deep personal connection to nature and the natural world, people who had grown up with maybe a deep affinity for the natural world, whether it was part of their culture, tradition, in the case of Rajendra Singh and Ariel, or it was a personal story like Jay's, who he found solace in nature when he was escaping troubles at home and abuse. And it was through this personal connection that they had this relationship with nature that led them to want to, commit their lives to addressing these different problems. So it was really a real personal connection we were looking for. And, of course, a story that we could follow. And that, with Ariel, she was, when we first met her, this is really before the tar sands blew up into the global concern that it is now. But we knew that she was going to be involved in some remarkable work. And if we just followed her, we would see something unfold. And the same thing with Rajendra, with this journey down the Ganges, with the hope to have an effect through this pilgrimage. And with Jay, would he be able to get his invention off the ground? Would he be able to raise the funds? So was it something we could follow that would see unfold and have a clear story and that also a real personal connection?
Well, let's talk about each of their stories a little bit. Maybe we can talk about Rajendra to start. You've described him as an Indian official gone rogue. Tell us his story.
Well, Rajendra, he's a remarkable man and has a very interesting backstory. He's known in India as the Water Gandhi for the work that he did in the 80s and 90s, revitalizing thousands of square miles of Rajasthan, which is a desert, and had become a very dry, arid zone over the last 100 years and forced, the mass migration of people to the cities, unable to farm anymore. And he was actually trained as a doctor and ended up being stationed in a small village in rural Rajasthan that was suffering the effects of tremendous drought, hardly anybody living there. All the young people had gone to the cities. And he ended up working with the villagers to revitalize the natural water systems there, the water table, by learning to catch the rains, reenacting this ancient rainwater harvesting techniques, which had been practiced in India pretty much up until the British had taken over. And he brought that back, and as a result, brought back the livelihoods of the villages there. And then that movement sped to villages all around Rajasthan, transforming, vast swaths of India. And he got major acclaim as a result. And then in the last 10 years, switched his efforts away from Rajasthan to the Ganges, which is the central river in India that almost 500 million people depend on for their survival, daily water needs, agriculture needs, so on and so forth. And it's one of the most polluted rivers in the world, under threat from dams. And he was appointed to a government body to help with the Ganges and using his stature. But he never really gave up his, where he came from, which is really, from the root ground up community organizer, and just trying to do what he can to make a difference. So he's still struggling to try and make an impact. But the film shows what he was able to accomplish over 40 days using his stature as a national figure, as a government official, but yet also a man of the people.
Now, Jay Harman is quite a different type of person. He's an inventor with a fascination for engineering. Tell us about his journey in the film.
Well, Jay is a biomimicist. It's an emerging movement of engineering and design that looks to natural systems for inspiration, basically saying that nature has evolved over millions of years how to be as efficient as possible, and we should look to that, those examples and base our designs and engineering from that. And he's had some remarkable successes over the years as an inventor, which happened late in his life. He, you know, he's in his 60s, and he really didn't start becoming an inventor until he was in his 40s. He was a wildlife fish and game officer, kind of like a Crocodile Dundee-esque character in Western Australia. He sailed around the world on boats. He was he invented the technology that was used for giant billboards and digital billboards around the world, and made money and lost money and had quite a series of adventures. We follow his idea of, can he, you know, copy what nature does and create a way to cool down the atmosphere and remix thermoclines, like what happens in the atmosphere is when heat is trapped, it causes these thermoclines, which stop air mixing naturally and create layers which cause, you know, global warming to occur at a faster rate. And he's trying to stop that by building a device which can mix the air again based upon what nature does. So we follow that idea kind of from inception all the way up to when he's able to get investor to support his idea and then do a small test.
There are quite a few really interesting visuals that kind of went along with his story in terms of the spirals, you know, disrupting clouds and smog and, you know, the upper layer of the atmosphere. It's pretty interesting visually. But people who are listening here will probably, you know, locally will be much more familiar with the struggle against the tar sands and the pipelines that are associated with them, which is probably the biggest environmental struggle in North America right now. What is Ariel Durange's role in that?
Well, Ariel is, as you said, a Dene woman from the Athabasca Chipewyan First Nation, based out of, Fort McMurray and Fort Chipewyan. And, you know, as many people, your listeners, and many people in Canada know, that's really kind of ground zero for the tar sands, the impact that the tar sands is having. And several years ago, it became apparent that there were effects from the tar sands on the communities living downstream. High rates of cancer, polluted water, and the fish and game they were able to live off for millennia were suddenly too polluted to eat, and they were being affected by this. And so Ariel is trying to stop this and has been trying to stop this for many years in many different ways, you know, being an activist, a community organizer, traveling the world, telling people what's happening, as well as kind of very practical on-the-ground measures to get people to, you know, to wake up to the reality and to try and get the corporations and the government to take notice. And, of course, what happened is over the course of the film, it coincided with this pipeline, the Keystone XL pipeline, which became a big national issue here in the U.S. as well, that Obama ended up weighing in on. To bring tar sands oil all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico for further refinement and then, you know, delivery overseas. And she was, you know, one of the major players and still is one of the major players in the campaign to stop that from happening. And as you see in the film, it unfolds and you see, you know, what happens with the Keystone XL pipeline and how it was able to be at least stopped for the moment. It's now an issue again and new pipelines are on the table. But yeah, her, you know, she does her remarkable work and continues to do so.
Emmanuel, most people who are engaged in working to working against this sort of tide of environmental destruction probably agree that the struggle really involves collective action. And in your film, you focus on the efforts of individuals. Why did you choose to take that approach rather than focusing on wider movements?
Well, I think there are films that talk about the wider movements that are in the sphere, documentaries that kind of look at the effect of movements as a whole historically and then now at the present moment. And we were really interested in capturing a very personal look at what's going on and not just the external realities of these particular issues, global warming, you know, the water contamination of the Ganges River, tar sands extraction, technologies, et cetera. But the personal commitment, the personal toll, the kinds of struggles that people have to go through to do this work, and to try and tell a very human story, a very intimate story, people who have committed their lives to trying to challenge the status quo, to go up against these, you know, monumental foes, if you will. You know, as I always think of as David and Goliath, like way of thinking about, especially Ariel's work, and what that's like. You know, what that's like for their loved ones, for their families, and for themselves, and to try to tell that story.
I was very struck by the music that was part of the film, and I read in the credits that you were involved in that. Talk about what you were trying to evoke with the soundtrack.
I co-wrote the score with a longtime writing partner, Scott Salinas. We actually both studied at Berklee College of Music together. I was a musician by training before I got involved in film. And a lot of thought went into the score. We actually wrote the majority of the score before we started editing the film and ended up cutting a lot of the film to already composed music, so which was a really interesting process. We went in with a certain idea of wanted an orchestral sound, wanted to have a unifying sound that would bring the characters together rather than having, let's say, music defining each one of the stories. We wanted a score that would act as a unifying vehicle for the stories and the characters, and bring it together and also have its own voice at the same time. So we developed certain themes, explored those themes, and then wrote different cues for the film based on that, and were able to record with an orchestra in Eastern Europe. So it was a really wonderful experience to be able to bring that musical element into the film.
The music's gorgeous in the film. What surprised you most while making the film?
The obvious one would be that, you go into making a film with an idea of how you want it to work out, how you imagine the story unfolding, and then, of course, it doesn't go the way you want, and you have to adjust. And sometimes those developments are a bit surprising, and how are you going to make it fit with the story that you thought was going to make sense in your head or on paper? And that's documentary filmmaking, but still, it's surprising when stories take a twist or turn, and you have to adjust and figure out, well, how is that going to work now? So that was definitely a surprise, and I think the characters themselves turned out to be surprising. Getting a chance to spend that kind of time with people and see them so intimately and get a real sense of what drives them, how they do what they do, and also the very human intimate side where they're just human beings, they're flawed. They're doing incredible work. People often look up to them, but at the same time, they struggle for the same issues all of us struggle with. They're insecure. They have problems, and it was definitely a surprise to see that in the way that we did.
Well, it's been great talking with you this morning, Emmanuel, and let people know about when the film's going to be happening here in town.
Yeah, it's playing as part of the Documentary Film Festival series, and it's playing on January 29th at 7 p.m. at the Bosa Center at Catalana University. And you can check out the website, elementalthefilm.com, on Facebook, Elemental the Film, as well as on Twitter, Elemental the Film. And you can see where we're screening, and we're going to be releasing in May in North America. So stay tuned for a theatrical release and download the film on iTunes and Amazon and all that stuff later in the year.
Okay, great talking with you.
Thanks so much for your time.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Emmanuel Von Lee, who is co-producer and co-director of the film Elemental. Elemental will be showing at Capilano University this coming Tuesday at 7 p.m. as part of the Docs of Motion Pictures film series. And Docs' presentation is the first presentation of the film screening in Vancouver.